If it happened in hockey.
Backhand scores!
You'll hear all about it. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290.
In the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Before we get to On the Beat, Dan is on line one. He was kind enough to wait through the commercial break. Dan, you think the NHL is overreacting about headshots? Dan, are you still there?
Yeah, how you doing?
Good, how are you doing, Dan? You think the NHL is overreacting about headshots?
Well, I honestly think they are. I think they're kind of, just because the NFL is kind of cracking down, I think they want to be part of the big four, so they're kind of going along that same path. Jovo got hit the other night. Mm-hmm. Brad Stewart got hit by Kostopoulos, and I think both are good hits. I mean, keep your head up.
You know, the Kostopoulos went down is an interesting one, because again, watching it live, I thought it was a dirty hit, and then watching the replay, I was saying earlier, I could see the argument. I don't have a problem with the suspension so much, but I could see the argument that Stewart, you know, batted at the puck, and Kostopoulos finished his check.
Yeah, I mean, it may be a dirty hit, but is it outside the rules? I mean,
that's a fair question, too.
I mean, that's what you would kind of like playing minor hockey. It's called like a suicide pass. The guy has his head down, and you take advantage of it. It's a nice thing to do, but it's hockey.
Well, I think that's one of the big problems and one of the big complaints that everybody has about these sort of the new enforcement of the headshot rule is that nobody knows what's a clean hit anymore and what's a dirty hit.
And I actually thought, and Drew disagreed with me, Dan, but I thought the Kostopoulos actually made initial contact with the shoulder, and he rode up to the jaw. But
that's right.
But, you know, it certainly doesn't help that Stewart immediately left the game and then broke his jaw. News was out before they suspended him. I think that certainly hurt. If Stewart gets hit there and falls down and doesn't break his jaw, you're probably looking at three games. And I actually think that's wrong. I don't think the injury should play a factor in the decision making.
Dan, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Hey, thanks a lot. Good work, guys.
Take care, Dan. Let's go. It's time for On the Beat.
On the Beat.
Starting on the beat today, we're going to actually start with really a classic hockey game.
Yeah.
One of the most famous hockey games of all time. It was 35 years ago this week when the Soviet Red Army team went into the Spectrum in Philadelphia and played against the Broad Street Bullies.
You were 12 that year?
No, I was actually 14. Thank you, though, Richard. That's clever. Did you think of that all on your own? So anyways, it was 35 years ago this week that game happened, and I don't know, I do encourage, and we've all seen the highlights of the game, we all remember the famous call by Bob Cole. Richard, you say it all the time.
They're going home!
Exactly, when the Soviets refused to, left the ice because they refused to play in that style of game against the Philadelphia Broad Street Bullies.
In the Flyers defense, and you should watch the Broad Street Bullies documentary on HBO, a great documentary about the Flyers.
But fabulous documentary.
In their Flyers defense, it wasn't like the Flyers just played that way against the Russians. They played that way against everybody.
That's right. They were equal opportunity goons.
And they beat them. Was it
4-1.
4-1.
4-1. Great game. I mean, it was, it sort of...
A contrast in styles is what it was.
Well, because everybody remembers that 10 days previous to the game against the Flyers, New Year's Eve in the Forum in Montreal, it was the Canadians against the Red Army, a game that ended in a tie, and it was a magical artistic display, whereas this game was the ruffians against the ballet.
I actually watched that game recently. It was on one of the overnights on Sunday night, and I watched that game, and what a game. That Montreal Red Army one. I haven't seen the Philly Red Army one full on, but what a game.
If you want to see some, the article's available at illegalcurve.com, and if you want to check out that HBO documentary, we highly recommend it. Great documentary about the Broad Street
Good Games. Article by Frank Cervelli.
Martin from Lindenwoods is online, too. Martin, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You think that you disagree with Dan about the legal reacting to the head hits?
In my take on it is that shots to the head will happen, but there's been certainly a litany of them over the last number of years. Again, going back to like Lindros, Turgeon, all those with Scott Stevens and others delivering the blows that you can hit a guy in the shoulder, you can hit him anywhere, but why on earth would you want to drill a guy in the head? To me, it takes away from the spirit of the game and... watching the game for as long as I have, going back to the Canadians in the 70s, like, nobody would ever think of doing a headshot at that point unless you were ready to go toe-to-toe with them to settle it up. But with the equipment they have now and everything else, it's just, I don't get why you need to hit a guy in the head. You can drill him as hard as you want otherwise and still lay him out.
Martin, I agree wholeheartedly with you on that point. That's often what my point is. You know, might it be clean or might it be, you know, within the rules? Yes, but why do you have to hit the guy to maim him?
And I think the issue is, Martin, I think as much as, you know, you could argue these calls, you know, both ways, each and every one of them, the fact that the NHL finally hands out a 6-game suspension to Gustavus is something that I'm in favor of, because that's how you get out of these hits out of the game. It's not so much, you know, fining him or anything like that, but when you take away 6 serious paychecks, then these guys go, hold on, maybe I shouldn't do this. And unfortunately, sometimes it takes money to make them wake up to this fact.
Yeah, definitely.
Martin,
Go ahead. But it's just that there seems to have been certainly over the last 15 or years or so a degrading degree of respect that players are showing each other. Like I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I even look back to the later in the Lemieux era. Like headshots weren't that relevant yet, but they were starting to come to the fore, and I just don't understand it. Hitting is a part of the game. I understand that. That's one of the better parts, that you can hit a guy, make him stand up and defend himself. But at the same point in time, you don't have to drill him in the head. If it's incidental, fine. That is what it is. But when you go straight for the head, even if his head's down, that's just dumb.
Martin, I agree with you. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
I think Martin raises a good point. I think one thing we have to take into effect is actually in society itself, and talking at a macro level, but it's true. We sensationalize, all the sports networks sensationalize a big hit, whether it's clean or not, right?
Well,
and then the kid, Drew, it's similar. You know, they talk about this in the NBA in terms of this, you know, the fundamental game. People don't know the fundamentals anymore, because all you ever see on a highlight reel is crazy dunks and crazy alley-oops. And it's similar here. You don't ever see a good, hard, clean hit on the highlights. What you see are the hits that somebody's running somebody from the other side of the ice. How many times do you see the Kostopoulos hit?
Lots. But, I mean, because it's newsworthy. But, I mean, I think there's a lack of respect, and I agree with Martin on that one. Anyway, 780-1290, let's continue on the beat. Rebecca Sanders of the Arizona Republic, a good friend of this program, with an article about the different parking analysis that the city of Glendale has received in regards to their purchase of the parking rights from the Phoenix Coyotes.
Both have, in my opinion, highly optimistic fan totals.
Of course, when you talk about fan totals.
Can you pull those up?
The city, yeah, I got it up here.
There's two studies that were, just background. Yeah. Rebecca writes about there's two studies that were conducted to see if the city will make back the money that they're putting into the Coyotes.
The city of Glendale is paying $100 million to own the parking rights at Jobbing.com Arena. They went out and they have two different parking studies based on, apparently there's parking, national parking lot experts, but okay. The two different studies.
What a job.
I'll tell you what a country, what a world that we live in that there's parking lot experts. There's two different studies. One of them estimates that, you know, that the team could collect $195 million in the first 25 years by owning that parking lot.
I call
Hooey on that.
Hooey on that.
Hooey, to keep it clean here. And another estimates that the team could receive $89 million.
That's quite a gap, Drew.
I'd say that's quite a gap.
$100 million.
How about $100 million of a gap? And this is assuming that attendance at the Coyotes games, and I suppose this would also be for other events at the Jobbing.com Arena, you know, concerts or whatnot. But,
sure.
You know, this is assuming, you know, that the Coyotes are going to attract, you know, between 12,000 and 15,000 fans a game for one study, or 11,500 to 14,500 fans in another study.
And, and realize, though, that the max capacity in the arena, I believe, is 16,000 in, like, three.
The details are sort of humorous, unless you're a Glendale taxpayer, but all it is just another reason why this has been one of the worst business deals ever entered into.
You look at the comments, and then you have your, you know, one or two Winnipeggers go in there and be like, it's a stupid deal, and then somebody, you know, the Coyotes fan will come in, and then I was actually reading some of the Glendale taxpayers were going at the Coyotes fans being like, this doesn't make financial sense.
Yeah.
It's our money.
It's nothing to do with
emotion,
whether or not you like hockey or not. It's just a bad deal.
That's right.
780-1290, 780-1290. Let's go to sort of two columns back-to-back. Don Esmond of the Buffalo News, after the World Junior Hockey Championship.
Article was such garbage.
Goes out on a bit of a rant and criticizes the behavior of the Canadian fans who, you know, invaded, quote-unquote, Buffalo for the World Junior Hockey Championship. In contrast, Cathal Kelly of the Toronto Star,
generally writes about the Blue Jays.
Yes, responds and says, you know, Eddie, we're not sure what you're talking about, but your tournament would have been a terrible flop had it not been for the Canadians who crossed the border.
Amen.
And for the millions upon millions of dollars that they injected into a struggling Buffalo economy. I have to believe that Don Esmond of the Buffalo News had nothing better to write about and couldn't possibly believe his own, really gibberish as it relates to this article. It doesn't make another issue where it just doesn't make any logical sense.
I started reading this article and I almost threw up. Like, how do you have this guy have a job? Seriously, how does he have a job? And this article is such garbage. I mean, put some time into it and think about it. I mean, there's nobody at these other games. Canada came in. They spent a ton of money in your exactly what you said, Drew. They pumped in money into the economy. They came in. They got gas there. They went to restaurants there. They bought drinks there. They went to hotels there. They went to they injected thousands and hundreds of thousands of dollars into the economy, an economy that's not exactly successful right now, as you mentioned, Drew. And you're gonna criticize them for getting one guy getting in a fight with a U.S. fan during a hockey game. Oh, God, that never happens in Philly. Never happens in New York.
I've been to a couple Bills games in my life. And I'll tell you what, more interesting...
Did you go to Buffalo for the scenery?
Certainly didn't go to Buffalo for the scenery, but more interesting than the Bills games, Mr. Don Esmond, holier than thou, are the fist fights that break out in the stands. I've seen guys go seven rows down flying to beat up another guy because he was wearing a New York Jets jersey. Chaos!
J-E-T.
Absolute unadulterated chaos
was
what I saw.
Was it Fireman Ed?
It wasn't Fireman Ed, but I couldn't believe the fan. What was going on there.
What was going on about Fireman Ed? I think it was Jim Rome on this station talking about how Fireman Ed has to be the richest Fireman Ed.
Because Fireman Ed was at the Colts game last week there. So, I mean, that's a very funny point.
You want to get the last one in here?
Yeah, we'll get the last one in here real quick. It's an article from Gary Shelton of the St. Petersburg Times.
Call him this with the paper. Damon Cristadero is the beat writer for them.
Yeah. Talking about Martin St. Louis, a guy who's really had a renaissance this year, a resurgence, and about how Martin St. Louis always steps up in the most crucial of moments for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't go anywhere. He was pretty good for the last 3 years, but now people are just, it's a better environment. He's obviously been one of the main reasons why Steven Stamkos has become a superstar NHL player at this young age. Marty St. Louis is in impeccable shape. He is absolutely, totally taking care of his body over the years. He's 35, as the article says, 35 going on 25, and that couldn't be more true.
Funny, I'm 29 going on 49, so it's almost the same thing.
Well, Drew, when you were telling me firsthand about the Russia-Philly game, I couldn't believe that you remembered Bobby Clark that well, and Reggie Leach, and,
I grew up with those guys in Manitoba,
Yeah, Billy Clement. You and Bernie Perron used to go for beers together. It's unbelievable.
I know, isn't it? I hate you, Richard. Anyways, let's go to break. And when we come back, we're going to do six things we learned this week. We still have Leah Hextall of CTV Winnipeg. We're taking your phone calls. Lots to come still here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to Sports Radio 1290. Six in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on Sports Radio 1290. I'm actually impressed with myself that I've been able to get the time right all day because the computer clock is off an hour.
Yeah, it's Eastern time.
I know. So when I look at the clock, I glance down. I'm surprised I remember. I can only do so many things at once. So to be able to process that information,
yeah, sure, that's good.
While talking and chewing gum, very impressive on my part, if I must say so myself.
I just realized I got over anxious and talked about some of my three things earlier in the show.
That's okay. You'll reiterate your points. You gotta drill them into your head.
Fair enough.
That's what they say. It doesn't really stick until you say it three times in a row. Isn't that the rule?
Absolutely.
Okay, there you go. Anyways, coming up in about 15 minutes time, CTV Winnipeg, Leah Hextall is going to be joining us in studio. Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail still to join us. 780-1290 to get in on some phone calls. That's 780-1290. Of course, you can reach us on Twitter at Illegal Curve and on Facebook, illegalcurve.com, and join the live chat at the R Desk. That's at www.illegalcurve.com. Richie, the first thing you learned this week, that the Washington Capitals aren't the offensive juggernaut they once were.
Six things we learned this week.
Yeah, Drew, that's exactly it. And you look at this team and, they're putting the puck on net again. Like they're shooting a lot. But their goal total, we talked about this with Craig Button earlier, their goal total, last year they scored 3.82 goals per game. This year they have 2.8. More than a goal drop if you can do quick math, which sometimes I'm able to do. And you and I talked about it on the way here. This might not be the offensive juggernaut we thought it was. It's certainly still a great offensive team, but
You got Ovechkin and Backstrom, but then hold on. Semin's been injured. Semin hasn't done anything. He hasn't shown any life even before the injury since November, right?
Right.
I think a goal since November, since the end of November. You know, we're in the middle of January here. That's Semin. You traded Fleischman
for Scott Hannon.
Mike Knubel's getting older. He's like 38, 37, yeah. 38. He's not getting, you know, he's not getting younger. He's not going to get any better. You know, Brooks Like, good solid player. Eric Fair came in, you know, had a pretty good season last year. Hold on.
There's nobody else, is what you're saying, by sort of motioning to me that way.
People sometimes are wondering, you know, Washington, they talk about them as a whole. But look at the player for player, guys. Ventura, David Steckel, these guys can't score. Youngsters like Perreault and Johansson have talent. Don't get me wrong. But they have talent on the back end here. But this team might have been a little bit of an identity crisis. And we talked about it last week. What happens if Alex Ovechkin and Nicklas Backstrom, who generally play together, you know, you match up against Philly. Pronger and Pronger locks one of those, that line down. If you don't split them up, who else is scoring? If Salmon's not scoring, who else is scoring? And this is going to be, I think, an issue moving forward. Can Washington score enough to make up for maybe the lack of goaltending and defense?
Interesting. Well, I obviously have to wait and see on that one, but it's an interesting point, you know, bug to put in our ear, as it were. 780-1290, that's 780-1290. My first point this week, and I'm honored that I get to share my opinions.
I don't know if I like this.
Okay. Well, you know, give Ezzy some orange juice, and he'll bounce back from the scurvy.
That's right.
If and when the Ottawa Senators commence the fire sale of their current roster, the Columbus Blue Jackets should be a prime suitor for Jason Spezza. The reason I say that is, you know, the biggest problem that the Blue Jackets have had, you know, forever, is that they've never had a centerman to play with Rick Nash.
Now, I understand the idea there, but I'm going to throw this out there.
Okay.
Rick Nash isn't the easiest guy to play with, Drew.
Okay.
It's in the style of play he has. And his style of play reminds me very much of Jerome Iginla.
Okay.
They like to move off the boards. They like to have the puck on their stick. Now, he has a better shot than him, especially a slap shot, you know, especially off the half boards. But they like to handle the puck a lot. You know, Matt Sundin was like that. Jerome Iginla was like that. Matt Sundin had trouble finding a line mate. Jerome Iginla's had trouble finding a line mate. I mean, it's part of that's on the teams, obviously, giving them enough talent. And Rick Nash has had trouble finding that line mate. Some of that, I think, Drew, has to do with the style of play. Now, Rick Nash isn't like the guy like a Steven Stamkos, isn't like a Danny Heatley. And Jason Spezza is a beautiful passer, but he likes the puck on his stick. I wonder, and we're getting very hypothetical, but I wonder if a guy like him would be able to mix with a guy like Nash, who's a scorer who likes the puck on his stick. He's not a Pavel Bure. He's not a Steven Stamkos. He's not a Brett Hull. And those kind of players are harder to play with, because the goals that they score generally from closer in and from handling the puck a fair amount.
All valid. I mean, I'm not going to argue with you at all. I just think that there's, if you look at, if Spets is going, there's very few teams that can absorb that contract. And Columbus makes sense. This is a team, a franchise that needs a splash. You know, attendance is down.
I would say
they've never won a playoff game.
Their defense is awful.
I know.
And their goaltending is much better.
I don't think this will, you know, necessarily be a catalyst to solving all their problems. But I think Rick Nash, is, you know, you got to try giving him some skill to play with.
Fair enough. And players like Spezza don't grow on trees. So if he ever became available, teams should be interested in him. Even though he's got seven even.
Columbus is 7.1 under the salary cap. So that's even before taking any salaries off.
But they got to be losing a lot of money, though, Drew.
Hand over fist, undoubtedly, at this point, which is unfortunate, because I think Columbus really could be a hockey market.
Absolutely. I mean, they got the development program moving through there, and then they do have, you know, the youth level. It's growing. And they don't have any other teams to hope for within Columbus.
Well, they have Ohio State.
Talking about professional teams.
Yeah, they have Ohio State, and that's it. Richie, Greg Sherman is quietly one of the better general managers in the NHL.
He just said, you know, he hired Joe Sacco.
General manager of the Colorado Avalanche, Greg Sherman
that's
is.
That's how anonymous he is.
People are probably might have been saying, who's Greg Sherman?
Not a former player, and I'd be the first to tell you, you certainly don't need to be a former player to be a good general manager in the National Hockey League. A former, you know, accounting background. But you look at what he's done, Drew, and he quietly brings in pieces. And he's developed guys the right way. And you could say he hasn't done that much. Well, sometimes, you know, you don't need to do a ton. You know, you draft Matt Duchene. You draft Ryan O'Reilly. Good players. You trade for Thomas Fleischman. You get rid of a salary like Hannah, you add a Fleischman. Fleischman's fitting very well in the second line. You trade Wolski. He's already been traded again by the other team. So you trade Wolski, and you get in Mueller, who was actually playing well before his concussion problems. You've accumulated young talent. You've let your young talent develop. You haven't signed veterans for no reason. And you look at that squad, Stasny, Deshane, Stewart, Mueller, if healthy. You know, you have some young guys like Gagliardi and O'Reilly and even David Jones. And you look at the back end, Kevin Shattenkirk, beautiful skater. And you've acquired O'Byrne and Hunwick. Well, Hunwick may be questionable, but Kaminsky, beautiful skater. You've created a team of skill, youth, and speed. And you signed Craig Anderson, which was one of the best signings in the National Hockey League over the past two seasons. And you hired Joe Sacco, who's done a great job. You've done very little wrong.
And nobody knows who you are.
And you're not. The biggest thing I like about him, he's going with it. He's not trying to mortgage, not trying to get, you know, not trying to make this team a contender before they're able to be one. And you know what? Greg Sherman is quietly becoming a very, very good, if not become, already is, a very, very good general manager in the National Hockey League. And because he plays in a market which has become very fairly anonymous, as Adrian Dater of the Denver Post kind of told us a couple weeks ago, he's not getting the attention I think he deserves.
The Nashville Predators are going to make the playoffs again based on the strength of their coaching staff. But come playoff time, your coaching staff will not win you any games when your roster is more resembles that of a rec league team.
That's fair, Drew, and I would agree with your second point there, because the truth is, when your coaching can do a fair amount of good against the 14 non-playoff teams and against even the playoff teams, but in a series against a top team, when you're Nashville Predators and you just can't score, you just can't score.
I mean, you look at
you can't score.
No, you look at their roster. I mean, and I'll pull it up here. If I knew how to spell Nashville, that would start. There's no offense. There's nothing there.
In our season preview episode, in a show, 3-hour special, we talked about this, and there's no offense anywhere in that roster.
None. So I mean, the fact that they're in the fact they're in a playoff position is strictly a testament to Barry Trotz,
Pekka Rinne.
They're coached tremendously.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they just come playoff time, it doesn't make a difference because they're going to go out, four, five, six games, something like that. Richie. The San Jose, we've talked about this all throughout the show. It's really been the focus of the show. The San Jose Sharks should trade for a defenseman now and not wait until the trade deadline.
Yeah, and you know what? And they need a defenseman. But what we were talking about before, I also like them to make a big splash for that goaltender. So I'd actually prioritize it with first A, trying to rely on Thomas Vokoun. But B, if not being able to do so, adding a defenseman. If not being able to do both, but a guy like Robin Regier. You talk about Chris Phillips, I like Robin Regier better. The problem is you have to trade young assets in both of those deals. So if you can maybe, change that a bit, add a veteran defenseman who can skate pretty well, and then add that goalie, that's what I would do. But I would try and address both. That's what the main concept is here. Their offense isn't a problem. There's nothing to do up front.
What I don't understand, and this isn't San Jose specific, it's general manager specific. You know your team has weakness.
Yeah.
You can see it. It's glaring. Why wait until the trade deadline to make that deal?
I agree.
If you have to improve your team,
if you're going to the dance, you got to find a partner, though, Drew.
Well, I know that's fine. That's true. That's fair. But if you know that your team, you need to improve your team to do anything, to make any sort of run or even make the playoffs, why not improve your team immediately rather than waiting until the last minute when the guy really has you under the gun? Doesn't make logical sense. Next, the final point this week. While Boston Bruins goaltender Tuukka Rask has a middling goals against average, his save percentage has steadily climbed throughout the season, indicating he is obviously stopping a higher percentage of pucks. With him regaining his confidence and Tim Thomas continuing his stellar play, the Bruins will be a force to reckon with come playoff time.
One issue here, though, Drew, and Gabriel Desjardins, you had a guest on last week that he's hopefully going to become a regular contributor in the Statistically Speaking segment. Last week he was on, and he made a great point about it last year. The value that Rask and Thomas, for example, in this case, add is great. And similar to last year with Brizgalov and Jason LaBarbera. But when you get into the playoffs, take the value added out of one of those goaltenders off the total team, output. And essentially, Rask or Thomas are doing nothing for you in the playoffs. And that team and the points that you've accumulated, there's a significant part of that is no longer in the equation.
Well, I disagree with. I disagree on the premise that I think it's important to have a backup goaltender.
I agree.
If something happens, look at Philly last year. They win that series if Michael Layton is not their goaltender.
Sure, Drew, but then that's a bigger question. I mean, then do they have this defenseman or forward, and what's valuable, what's not valuable? But having two goalies is obviously is a luxury. I'm just saying that when you get to the playoffs, You can only use one of those goalies.
I know that, but I think having the other guy there in case there's a problem is a nice.
It helps.
Is a nice cushion to have.
Unfortunately, Thomas is at an age where you can't trade one of those two because Thomas is probably going to retire in 2 years.
Yeah, and he's.
And you want Rask to be the goalie of the future.
And so he's bounced back from his.
I'm just saying the value added during the regular season is no longer there in the playoffs.
I understand what you're saying. I see your point. Anyways, let's go to break, and when we come back, Leah Hextall from CTV Sports is going to join us in studio, and we're going to talk about the Ottawa Senators, who should be traded on their roster. Potentially, where could they go? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Top of the hour. Welcome to the last hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. If you're just joining us, we had Craig Button from the NHL Network on at around 9 o'clock this morning. And of course, if you missed any of the interview or any of the segments in today's show, the show will be available on iTunes. Subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Get the show automatically emailed to you. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook. Facebook.com/IllegalCurve and join in the live chat going on at www.IllegalCurve.com. Michael Remus is operating the R desk. We're thrilled to welcome to the studio Leah Hextall from CTV Sports. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, guys. I can't believe I'm here. This is big time.
Wow.
Big time for me.
It's big time for us just having you here as well. So we're thrilled that you're able to join
Love
us for the last
pleasure.
Hour here.
Well, you guys are down a couple men today.
Just Ezzy. Just
yes,
Ezzy.
I mean, so.
Ezzy feels the role of a couple
well,
men.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. And therefore, you bring in a woman because she does usually the work of two men, right?
Oh.
I've learned
not to argue with women.
Yeah.
So, you know.
You're a good man.
Yes, exactly.
That was a good first. Are you hosting the Golden Globes tomorrow?
Me and Ricky, yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Ricky Gervais available. Yeah, on the, I think on CTV. I believe tomorrow.
Yeah,
tomorrow
right.
evening.
Yeah,
for
the ad for it.
Yeah, there you go.
Good plug.
Thank you very much. The Ottawa Senators.
You're engaged now. You're going to be watching that, eh?
I will be watching football. Well, I guess it's after the game.
Are you going to watch red carpet? You and Joan Rivers?
No, I actually like the Golden Globes. But they're getting panned in the paper.
Look what I've done to the show.
No, yeah. This is
bringing the double X chromosome and
yeah.
Yeah.
I like the Golden Globes because they're at least they claim to be or purport to be a little bit more offbeat than the Academy Awards.
Alcohol. People drink at them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a good time.
Little known fact: the Hollywood Foreign Press that is in charge of the Golden Globes is like 8 people.
Really?
Yeah. Very small. That's why there's not a lot of legitimacy now that sort of there's a article in various publications that are saying as such.
We have Joan Rivers on the line.
Should we talk about hockey? Or,
yeah, let's do it.
We're okay. Ottawa Senators, a team that...
You can call that hockey.
Mm. Wow. Team that exceeded expectations last year, as we've outlined clearly, struggling this year. You got a general manager fighting with a head coach, allegedly. You got an owner threatening to fire both of them. Let's start with a two-part question. A, should the Senators begin a fire sale? And then B, we'll break down the roster and see where all the players should end up. We'll start with you, Leah. Should the Senators begin to clear house?
Well, I think they have a lot of aging players with a lot of big salaries, but the thing is that I'm not quite sure how they are going to clean house and get what they're worth, because the fact is no one's playing well. And that's the problem with a fire sale at this point, is that you're not going to get what things are worth, and that's never a good thing for a hockey team. But at the same time, they have to do something. But I honestly look at this roster and I laugh at people who think that this team should be doing something, because I don't think that mm-hmm. it's got tons of talent. I think this is a mediocre hockey team. They are not really doing much less than what I would expect them to do. Yes, they have Spezza out and they've had a few key injuries, obviously, with Leclerc not being healthy this year. But the fact is that they're a mediocre hockey team. They should get rid of what they can, as any mediocre hockey team should, and they should start to build toward the future. But it's really a dysfunctional family right now, because the fact of the matter is that you look at Brian Murray, and the thing that bugs me the most is he says his biggest disappointment is the fact that his team has no work ethic. And that's not him challenging his team to try to spark them to do something. I think that's the truth. I think this is a bunch of millionaires skating around not doing much. So I don't know who wants them. So I wouldn't want them. If I was a hockey team, there might be one or two pieces on there that I'd like. And, you look, and the fact is that he said that Erik Karlsson, he's untouchable. And that might be like the one piece right now that I might, even though he's young, he could have some talent and do some things in the future.
Well, if it's a competing on ice issue, which, Brian Murray's indicated and you're, sort of agreeing as such, doesn't, to some extent, that fall on Corey Kluster? Look,
yeah,
the lack of talent. Look,
it's a talent issue.
I know it's a talent issue, but they should have to compete. There's lots of teams who aren't that talented that compete night in, night out. Richard?
Yeah,
I mean, sure. I mean, that's a small issue within the realm of the many issues this team has. The biggest issue here is talent. You can't win the NHL without talent. I've never seen a talentless team win the Stanley Cup, although Calgary sure came close that one year. but in reality, you have two tradable assets who are on long-term deals right now. One's Daniel Albertson, who I don't know if they're ever going to trade because he's a lifetimer there. He's at $4.875 million cap, but still can add value, can be a scoring winger, can play the power play. Obviously, he's a complete player. He's one. Mike Fisher's the other one. Mm-hmm. Do you want to trade them, though? I mean, that's the question. Mike Fisher, I believe, is like 27. He's 30. So Mike Fisher's 30. To be honest with you, I would try and trade both of them. I don't know if you can pull that off, and I don't know if Brian Murray's going to give him the power. Now, those are the two, you know, guys who are on long-term deals, or, you know, longer term than this year, who I'd look to trade. In terms of UFAs, I mean, you have three significant UFAs. One's Chris Phillips. He got to probably have to trade. Two is Kovalev, who you might as well trade because you're only going to get a fifth-round pick, better than nothing.
Yep.
And then three is Pascal Leclerc, who people might actually... You might actually have to drive him to the other team's arena, drop him off by, you know, in the truck stop.
He'd still get injured.
He might get injured. Yeah. But also, you'd have to pay the other team, you know, $10 million to take it. So in reality, the tradable assets, like I said, are minimal. So you have to, in my opinion, just clean house. And, you know, Fisher and Albertson, if they're there for the next couple of years, you're not going to be good anyway, so might as well get something for them. I always understand why teams hold on players who aren't very good, who are their best players, but you're not going to be good. Get rid of them. Just be really bad in the NHL. That's the best way to do it. Be terrible for 2 years. They're going to get a high pick this year. Be terrible for the next 2 years. Let all these guys go. Be awful. Get some high draft picks.
The Blackhawks.
You have Robin Leonard. You have Jason Spezza. You have some other young pieces that people actually think are pretty good.
Yeah, and the thing about Elfie, though, too, this year is that he's actually starting to look his age.
Yeah,
he's 38, and he's looking slow.
Back.
But there are some teams out there, like the New York Islanders, like the Edmonton Oilers, that mm-hmm. have young cores that could use a nice, consistent veteran presence. Someone to come in, and, yeah, you're not going to get tons for him, but you might get a few things for your future. So you might want to strike now while the iron is hot. But really, they don't have a lot out there.
No, there's not a lot.
I don't think there's a lot. People keep saying they should just blow it up, and it's like, yeah, but what are you blowing it up for? What are you going to get? But they got to do something. This is ridiculous.
My point would be, why are you spending all this money to the cap if your team's terrible? Just spend
absolutely.
No money. I don't have a problem with an owner who does that.
Well,
don't spend any money. Spend money when I need you. When I need you to spend money.
I don't think
go to the cap when we're a contender.
But I don't think they anticipated being this bad. I mean, they played way over their heads last year.
The Sergei Gonchar.
That's really the problem.
Gonchar.
Well, that's not to make any sense.
What
in the beginning.
Disappointment.
Didn't make any sense.
Well, I mean, and this is a guy who's at $5.5 million only for the next 3 years, and he's been awful. There's really no other way to sugarcoat it, how bad he's been. Now, if you can get rid of, I mean, you look at this, you look through their roster, there's a couple, if you can somehow get rid of his contract to a team in need of an offensive defenseman in the playoffs, that's the only one who's maybe going to bite on it. But even then, that would be a general manager, really, who's,
you can still get good value for Fisher and Albertson, in my opinion, if they're both willing to go.
Well, I think, I mean,
Fisher comes along with Carrie Underwood.
Yeah, that's true.
No, but I mean, in the southern states, I'm not even joking about that. In the southern states, in those kind of markets, there are teams that might bite on that because of her star status, and they're all about that kind of thing.
And doesn't she already hate Ottawa? Isn't that what
She hates Canada. She said on Ellen DeGeneres. Nobody should listen to her music.
Really? She hates all of Canada?
She was like, and then I heard he was from Canada, and I was like, ugh. And ever since then, I can't look at her.
Yeah, I can look at her. that's something I can still do. Alfie, his cap hit is 4.87. Next year, 2 years down the road from now, he's only going to make $1 million in actual cash handed out. What team could use a guy like Alfie? A team that's in need of leadership.
Most teams could use a guy like Alfie.
I mean, this guy who's
teams could use a guy like Alfie. I don't know if he'd actually want to go. I believe he has no trade.
I'm sure he probably does, but I mean, at some point in time,
Montreal,
don't you always want to win the cup?
Montreal would be a good spot for him. I mean, he's one of those guys that fits in really everywhere. Mike Fisher, though, a guy who could play center like that, I mean, he's got a fairly high ticket at 4.2 a year for the next 2 years after this year. But Mike Fisher is kind of a playoff guy.
Mike Fisher is the one guy on that roster right now that I can actually see them getting something for.
No. Otherwise, Phillips, you can get, if you're Phillips, I would try and package Phillips with somebody and try and get some first-round picks.
Phillips has been horrible this year.
Yeah.
He has no goals.
Yeah. Phillips isn't going to add offense as much. He misses Volchenkov. And that's a big thing. He misses Volchenkov. But Phillips in the right system would be a nice addition for a good team moving forward. Unfortunately, right now Ottawa is exactly the opposite of that. And they structurally are off. They don't help their defense at all because their forwards, not only are they poor in terms of creating offense, for the most part, but Kovalev's awful defensively, Spezza's awful defensively. You know, you can talk about a couple of the guys who are fairly flawed up front.
Do you see Brian Murray lasting?
No, no. Brian Murray's gone. Corey Kluson's gone. It'll be a complete and total house cleaning at the end of the season. I'm surprised. I always don't understand why you don't fire him now. Just fire him now. If you don't trust this guy to move forward, why do you want him making any moves at the deadline? It was like when the Pierre Charlie, they almost let him make, you know, moves at the deadline. Well, if you're gonna fire the guy, just fire him. Put an interim guy in, hold, you know, let him evaluate or start or hire another GM right away and give him like Feaster, give him 4 months to evaluate the roster.
You know, that's a very fair point if he's definitely going to be out. I mean, he's managed to survive a lot of different things there, though.
If you wouldn't let him fire the coach, which you shouldn't have let him fire the coach because he's fired enough coaches, but if you wouldn't let him fire the coach, you don't have confidence in him to run your team. Fire them both, then.
Then why are you
firing? You generally can't fire a GM and then leave a coach for the next GM because he wants to be able to pick his own coach.
Yeah, you've seen it work in you know, some situations.
In Vancouver
it worked.
But how many situations has it not worked?
More often than not, that coach is usually on the hot seat.
Succession is the coach first, and then the GM afterwards.
If the GM's going to run your entire organization,
you saw in football, Mike Holmgren sit 1 year with Eric Mangini. I thought Mangini quickly did a good job, but he fired him anyways because they don't have the same philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the guy he picked. He's not hand-picked.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair enough. Anyways, why don't we go to break? When we come back, we're going to do our NHL All-Star mock draft. I guess you two will be the team captains, and I'll be the moderator. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Okay, let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Good morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Joined in studio by my good friend Richard Pollock. Leah Hextall from CTV Sports is with us. Tim is getting us in and out of the break, doing his magical job as always. Michael Remus is operating the R desk. Come join him at www.illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter.
Great album.
The Black Keys?
I should plug my brother's show now. They're covering the song.
Are they?
27th at the Academy.
Okay, nice. There you go. Yeah, Richard's brother, good, real good. If you like cover bands, just like to rock out, very good cover band.
You guys have very good music on this show.
There you go.
Yeah. That's why we have Tim in charge.
That's right.
We leave him in charge.
That a boy, Timmy. That a boy, Tim.
Exactly. It's time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show's NHL All-Star Game Mock Draft. Our two captains are Leah Hextall and Richard Pollock. Funny how that works out. And I flipped a magical coin in my head. Leah, you have first overall pick.
I have first overall pick. Well, I think I got to take... As much as it pains me, because my boyfriend is going to start game, Sidney Crosby, if his head gets a little bit better.
Okay.
But I'm going to put
that... Does he know that, by the way?
That he's my boyfriend?
Yeah.
Subconsciously.
Interesting.
Yeah, subconsciously he does.
Okay.
Anyways, I'm going with Steven Stamkos. I mean, how can you not go with this kid? He has been unbelievable this year, and not only is he an offensive force, he also has been able to dazzle us, and I think the All-Star Game is exactly what showcases him best. So I got Stamkos.
For our listeners, we're probably going to ignore defensemen because really, who cares about defensemen in an All-Star game? And we have some time. We have some time limitations involved here.
You faked me out. I crossed off Crosby, and then it was a fake out.
Well, there's gonna be trouble at the homestead there for Lee and Sydney. That's all we can tell you there. Richie, you're up on the clock.
First off, I'd like to thank Carolina for their amazing hospitality.
Oh,
that's nice. Nice. Well done. I assume this is a Patrick Elias pick because there's really... why is he an all-star for...
I'm thinking, player? I don't know, you can talk about Alexander Ovechkin all you want, but he hasn't been the second best player in the league this year.
Unfortunately, he has to be there.
I'm taking Crosby and going to take a risk that, you know, that he's going to play. And if he's obviously going to play, he's the best player
in the
world.
Do you really think he's going to
play? Probably not.
Okay.
But I'm taking the risk.
Richie is known as a risk taker.
Alrighty.
Yeah, you're going bungee jumping after the show, aren't you, Richie?
Yeah, into a plate of eggs, bacon, and toast.
Next segment, we'll discuss breakfast. Leah, you're back on the clock.
Well, this clock isn't going to have to tick very long because I am a Flyers girl. I bleed the orange, and I'm going with Claude Giroux because this guy is so intelligent and he's so creative, and I just love him.
Been in a goal-scoring slump lately. You're going to bank on that slump coming out.
He is not in a slump. I don't like to categorize it as a slump. He just needed a couple of games to just kind of watch what everybody else is doing.
Interesting.
Oh, the beer's been hot there lately.
Interesting.
I'm taking Daniel Sedin. I mean, he's got 25 goals, 29 assists. I mean, the guy's been dominant. He looked great again yesterday.
there's probably a better line in hockey than the Sedins and Burrows. I mean, I don't think you can beat that line, and I'm going to take Daniel and hope to God that Leah doesn't take Henrik.
Well, I was going to say, do you just want to package them up? Because I don't want either of them.
I don't want them on the same team in the All-Star
game.
That's
the whole joke, is that the captains are going to make sure that they're not on the same team.
You might see the first ever All-Star game fight if they play on a different team than
they won't play. They won't play unless they're together.
Yeah. Leah?
Well, I'm going to bring a little bit of grit, and as much as it pains me because I hate him, but if I'm picking a team, I want him on my team, I'm taking Ryan Kessler.
Really? Why do you hate him?
I don't like the Vancouver Canucks.
Really? Right before the Vancouver Canucks interview next segment.
Yeah.
With Matthew.
Fortuitous time with Matt Sakaris.
I don't like them. I appreciate the test and what they're doing. I like that, but, I think they have a lot of swagger for a team that hasn't done much over.
Ooh.
Interesting. Years. Funny, I have equal amounts of swagger, and I've done very little as well. Richie.
That's true. In your 40 years on Earth, Drew, you haven't done as much as you anticipated.
For the record, for those of you, because there are now people legitimately asking how old I am. I'm not 40. I'm 29 years old, for the record. Richie, go ahead.
Henrik Sedin.
There you go. That was very kind of you, Leah, not to take Henrik there in that instance. You're back on the clock.
Well, let's see. I think I'm going to have to go. I like the youth. I'm going to go with Anze Kopitar.
Yeah, Anze Kopitar is one of my favorites. He's very strong in the puck, good skater when he gets going, and got a really good wrist shot. And yeah, he's a great puck handler, very very good player.
So what you're saying is you're jealous?
I'm a little bit jealous.
Yeah, that's all right.
I'm fine with that. I'm gonna pick one of my boys, Corey Perry. So I've been one of my boys. Love Corey Perry. Corey Perry underneath the hash marks there controls the puck on the boards and has a terrific shot. He's the kind of guy who finds little openings and is an easy guy to play with. So I think he fared pretty well in an All-Star game, although the lack of physicality probably hurts him.
Well, maybe he should start playing a little bit more of a physical style in the All-Star game, make it a little bit more entertaining.
Roenick was the only guy I remember hitting in the All-Star game.
Yeah. I think he hit one guy and everybody made a big deal.
They did.
It.
It's true. Remember that? Yeah.
Leah, you're up.
Well, I'm going to go with Evgeny Malkin. I have to say, I went down to Stanley a couple years ago when Detroit was playing Pittsburgh, and I always thought, oh, Evgeny Malkin's a good player. Then I saw him on the ice. He is just a big boy. You don't realize how big that kid is, how much power he has until you see him play. And he's a force. He's a force of nature.
By the way, kudos for calling it Stanley there. I like that.
Oh, well, we're on a first-name basis.
Okay, just want to make sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was good. I just wanted to check in on that. Richie, you're up.
Well, Drew, Martin St. Louis, we talked about him earlier.
Yeah.
He's probably the most underrated player in the National Hockey League. I mean,
I concur.
Yeah, he's just dominant. Yeah, I don't know. I just see him as being, there's really no flaws in this guy's game. And he's an all-around player. And I really do think Stevie Yzerman after going to Tampa Bay and working with Martin St. Louis thinks, why did I not have this guy on the roster for the Olympics?
Leah.
Well, I think that I'm going to go with Patrick Sharp. Patrick Sharp.
Former guest of the show?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
You guys are big time.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are slumming this week with me, is what you're telling me right now.
Well, Patrick Sharp wasn't available this week,
exactly.
So he might be next in line.
No, Patrick Sharp, I love him. I think, sometimes on that Chicago team, he gets lost in the mix a little bit, but he's such a strong contributor. He's there every night, and he's just got so much talent. And on top of that, for the ladies, very good-looking man.
I would just like
very
to point out...
Very good-looking man.
Thank you. You're talking about me.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, the gentleman is
right. Oh, I'm blushing. I'd just like to point out we're about to be our 12th pick in, and Alex Ovechkin is still on the board.
I know. I just noticed that, too.
Well, I didn't notice that. That was a significant oversight on my part. So I'm going to select Alex Ovechkin. I need a left winger.
And plus, he's all-star. That's what he is. He's going to do well for you.
Yeah. He lives for those most important big games. Leah, you're up.
Well, I'm going to take my other Chicago guy. I'm going to go with Patrick Kane just because they have so much familiarity with each other.
You're going to go partying, that's why.
Yeah, and I think that the double Patrick will work well for me. Team Hextall. Yeah, it's going to work well for Team Hextall.
I'm going to take Matt Duchene, who has almost already come into the second tier of star level already. I mean, the guy is probably one of the most beautiful skaters in the National Hockey League. Great stick handler, but a guy like that in a game like this is, to me, Duchene is going to be... He's already, can't say he's moved ahead of Tavares because of the fact that Tavares plays in Wasteland, but Duchene has been a tremendous player, and he's really, really, really taken his game to the next level pretty quickly.
And for...
I need a center.
And based on your Patrick Kane selection, Remus over there at www.illegalcurve.com is posting the Patrick Kane limo picture right
great.
Now.
Oh, great. He's built like a 12-year-old boy.
And plus, Maddie can dance.
Who?
Matt Duchene.
Really?
Didn't you see the little dance celebration after the goal?
Which one? When was that?
The little one. I don't know what game it was.
Did I see it?
A few weeks ago. Come on, it's all over the place.
Was that the overtime goal against Ottawa?
I don't know.
You were watching Dancing with the Stars that night. That's why you missed it.
But they did the little dance together. It was all choreographed. What game was that?
I don't know.
You guys find it. You guys.
Pretty sure that was Dancing with the Avalanche.
Remus will put that up at www.illegalcurve.com. Leah, you're on the clock.
You know what? Just for the crowd, I'm going to go with Eric Staal. I mean, there we go. It's right there. You got it. With Paul Stastny.
Yeah, that's Remus pulling it up, yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
You go ahead, legalcurve.com,
and have
the video.
I have ADD, apparently. Anyways,
it's hard to keep track of which computer's doing what, because this is an independently operated computer.
I'm overwhelmed.
I know.
I'm going to go with Eric Staal. Okay. I mean...
Local boy, playing in his hometown?
Absolutely, playing for...
Or playing in his home, you know...
In Carolina.
Yeah, there you go.
So we're going to go with Eric
Thunder
Staal.
Bay, man.
And he's a good player. At the end of the day, Eric Staal's a good player.
Okay, Richie.
Well, Drew, I'm actually going to take a player that I really liked before the season, and I really liked the way he's played, a Swedish winger. Louis Eriksson, really good skater, and what a shot he has. He'd be great in a game like this. I'll come out the wing. Louis Eriksson, quick. I guess we got to rush
here.
If we don't get quite all the way through it, I think it'll be okay. Leah, you're up.
Well, I mean, Jonathan Toews is sitting on this list still. I would have picked him a long time ago, but I don't know if he's going to play because he's got the shoulder injury.
That's good value.
I'll take him. Hometown boy, Johnny Toews. You know, can't ever go wrong with the Conn Smythe winner, I guess.
That's true. That's
Plus,
true.
He has a lake named after him.
That's true.
That's right. Yeah. He sure does.
Richie.
Well, Brad Richards is still there.
That's what I was going to say.
You know, Louis Eriksson does need a line mate.
Brad Richards?
I think that would be a pretty good combo. If we could get James Neal here, too, it would be great. But
Pretty good. Leah.
Can I forfeit? And I don't want either of any of these three left guys.
You want a Ginla?
I don't want a Ginla. This is the All-Star game.
Rick Nash is left.
Nash?
Oh, well, I don't want Kessel either. Okay, Kessel. Well, then I guess
I'll take Elias, Backus.
Six guys left. You want any
I'll
of these guys?
Backus. I'll take Backus. You know what? I'll take Backus.
David Backus is a good player.
I like Backus, yeah.
He's a player that's not built for this game, that's for sure, but he's a good player nonetheless. Jerome McGinley's sitting there. He's actually been very, very good over the past month and 2 months, so there's no reason not to take him. If he wasn't playing in Calgary with guys who really don't comp. Well, Tanguay's actually played well with him. McGinley's been good. I'm taking him.
Okay, yeah.
Well, this is hard. I guess I'll take Alishemsky.
Under the list of guys who don't deserve to be in the All-Star game, period.
We're now into the dregs of the All-Star game.
It's just, why are these guys even here?
I'll take Nash because, although he's really struggled lately, too. Scott O'Neill's kind of got to be wondering, what's going on with Rick Nash? What's going on with him?
I hear he needs good centerman, Jason Spezza.
Yeah,
I saw them play in Calgary, actually, and I was not... Well, actually, he's a pretty big guy. Takes about four strides to get across the ice.
Kessel or Elias?
Are you kidding me? I can't pick a Leaf, so I guess I'll go with Patrick.
I'll take Kessel. Yeah, he gets a lot of hate because of the fact that he's on the Leafs, and they've kind of asked him to be something he's not, which
Absolutely.
Is something I worried about.
Good
but he actually, give him credit, he scored one of the most beautiful goals the other night in San Jose, and they cut across and two defensemen went around two defensemen and scored against, I think it was Niemi in the goal for that game. I forget who was in net. But Kessel is actually, he brings to the table a lot of all-star qualities. He just gets bashed a little bit too much. And if he was put in the right environment, he'd be a 35-40 goal scorer in a place without much pressure. And
we'll get a starting goaltender from each of you.
Starting goaltender. You know what? I'm going Carey Price.
Are you going to do that dance? That one I know. That pose. I'm going to go with my boy for a long time, and I've really liked Jonas Hiller. Man, this guy's so underrated. He's top five in the NHL goal, in my opinion. He is great, tough to beat, and I know this was coming out party 2 years ago when he kind of stole that series against San Jose. This guy's money.
There you have it.
He's money, he doesn't even know it.
So money that you don't even know it. The excellent swingers reference. Nicely done. Anyways, there you have it. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show's mock NHL All-Star Game.
Can we mock the idea too?
Say that again?
How's my team looking over
there?
Your team's
looking. You know what we'll do? We'll post these up on
LegalCurve.com. What we'll do is we'll get Remus to play to simulate this game in NHL.
Yeah, Remus, you can do that probably. Exactly. We'll put all these players. You'll simulate it online. And we'll see which between Leah and Richard, which one is going to be the All-Star Game winner.
Canucks coming up.
When we come back, Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Sorry, I turned down my mic. It's killing my ears for a second there. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Drew just had a nap.
I wish I had a nap. I could really use. I could use a nap.
Drew, Leah can move his chair over there, and we could get rid of you pretty quickly.
You guys seem to be trying to get me out of here very quickly. I'm not so sure I'm happy about that. You know, I'm being usurped.
I want you here, Drew.
Thanks, Leah. I appreciate that. That's very, I appreciate that very much. Anyways, we're trying to get a hold of Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail. So we have a crack squad of a team working on that vigorously to try and get Matthew Sakaris on the line.
It's early there on the West Coast.
Yes, we appreciate all the West Coast guests when they join us, you know, because, well, I'd be asleep.
Yeah.
I was up at 6:45 this morning.
That's true.
I know. It's troubles. I was waiting for you, Richard. Waiting. Richard says, be ready at 7:15. 7:15 comes and goes. There's no ride. 7:20 comes and goes. No response to my BBM. No response to my phone call. Where's Richard? 7:30. That's 15 minutes of valuable sleep I missed out on. Do I get an apology? Do I get a...
You guys are like an old married couple. I love it.
It was a long, shower. It's early on a Saturday morning, Drew.
Yeah.
The truth is, I would have BBM'd you, but my phone. I have phone issues.
Yes, and the issue primarily being that you break them on an hourly basis.
My third BlackBerry in about a month.
Wow, yeah. I just got my first BlackBerry, and I'm still learning how to use it.
Really,
I'm so bad.
Prepare to have your life taken over.
It does. It's addictive.
Yeah, it's terrible. It actually is terrible.
Yeah,
it's addictive.
Okay, I think we're just about to get ready to get Matt on the line. Looks like they're doing something over there.
Just quickly talking about
Vancouver. No, they got a voicemail, they'll keep trying there.
That's fine. We'll try and get them in the next segment or two. Quickly talking about Vancouver, guys, they are the most, to me, the most complete team in the National Hockey League. And what you have there is you have Sedin and Sedin, obviously. This team can do a couple of things to you, but to me, the best part about the squad overall is how they can beat you in all situations. And they're deep, and there's really no chain. You know, you have your Sedin line with Burrows, and you have Kessler, who's coming to his own as really the second-line center on the team. And then you have the ability to throw in Manny Mehotra, who was, make no mistake about it, Manny Mehotra was signed by the Vancouver Canucks to win faceoffs.
Yeah.
And he's done that.
I'm supposed to be pulling up that stat at a
proficient level. So you really, up the middle, you have guys who can do everything for you. And then on the wings, you have enough mix of scoring and speed and physicality. And that's not even talking about defense. I mean, Leah, you can speak to it. Vancouver gets a lot of attention here. Is there anything that they really lack up front?
I don't think so. I mean, it's almost getting boring talking about them because there's not really a lot of adversity when it comes to this. And this has taken a few years for this to come together. They've brought in the problem with Vancouver the past couple of years was that they really only had two lines. Their first and second line got the job done, but then their third and fourth line were lacking. But now they've really come and they have a solid third line. Their fourth line has some great quality character guys. And a lot of those guys they've been pulled up from the Manitoba Moose. You know, you have the Alexander Boldukes of the world. You have the Aaron Volpatti who's up there right now. And, you know, and he's staying up there and he's sticking, which is unbelievable. So, I mean, they really have three solid lines. They have a defensive core. Their defense, though, can be a little suspect. They have a few guys in there. You know, sometimes I question Aaron Rome and a few other players. But, I mean, really, you know, you look at the back and look at, you don't only have Roberto Luongo, but you have Corey Schneider as a backup who's doing a solid job in coming in there and getting them wins when they're giving Luongo a night off and allowing him that chance to rest, which he really hasn't had in the past few seasons, and he's looked spent by the conference finals. So I really think that this is the year. This is the year. If they don't do it this year, because they're not going to be able to hold on to everything just like any good team for too much longer. But to me, the biggest thing that stands out is Ryan Kessler.
Yeah,
you know, I just think that guy is just a stud out there.
He's such a competitor.
Yeah.
I wanted him to be the captain. I thought he should have been the captain. You know, I don't have an issue, obviously, with Henrik Sedin being named the captain of the team. But Ryan Kessler, to me, he adds to your game in every aspect. He can win faceoffs. He can be physical. He can kill penalties. He can play power play. He can skate with you. He hasn't backed down from anybody. And to think he's the second line center on the team and he's taking his offensive game to the next level, it's really a luxury this team has. And then you look at the Sedins, who are just becoming dominant players. They're absolutely dominant players. They control. That's the biggest thing about them. They control the puck. And when you add in the fact that they're 55.8% face-off level, so they control the puck off the face-off, and then they have puck possession players, and then they add in speed with guys like Burrows and Mason Raymond, both beautiful skaters, and then you add in a guy who can shoot like Michael Samuelson, and the depth players that you just talked about. Up front, to me, there's no holes. And then you talk about the back end. Hamus is a shutdown defense when they brought in. Ballard does have his spurts, but he's a terrific skater, and he's very physical, which has helped, and that certainly adds in a nice element there.
Malhotra's currently second in the NHL in faceoff percentage, 62.7%.
Wow, that's unbelievable.
And that's why they signed him. There's make no mistake about it. San Jose really didn't need to sign him, but not because they're good in the faceoff circle, and they have Scott Nichol, undervalued guy who can win faceoffs at a crazy level too. So they had the two of them, and they couldn't sign both. But that's why San Jose brought him in, and Vancouver was smart and brought him in. And then in terms of Vancouver's back end, you bring in at speed like Christian Ehrhoff, who's offensively talented.
Great shot.
Great
beautiful shot.
Exactly.
Yeah, from skate. The point.
Bieksa can do really, you know, all things well for the most part. Sometimes he lacks defensively.
But he is a catalyst, too, which is also a bonus that you need back there, some grit.
And exactly. And he's grit, and he's not afraid to back down. You know, Edler is very, very solid all-around defenseman. And I think we have Matthew on the line, so we'll get right into
it. We do. Matthew Sakaris, the Globe and Mail, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Matt. Nice and early there on the West Coast. We appreciate you giving your time. Matt, we were just talking getting you on the air, about Ryan Kessler and dynamic performance so far this year. By not being named captain, has Ryan Kessler been able to improve as a player without having the added pressure of the captaincy on his shoulders?
It's funny. I asked him that question just a week and a half, 2 weeks ago when he was in the midst of this great run. And he said no. He said, he didn't really feel as though the captaincy was something that was coming his way. And so it wasn't a situation where, now I no longer have to be the voice of this team and I can just go out and play hockey. I do think he was quite touched when he got the letter A last year, and that was clearly something that he used as motivation and as a tool to bring his game forward and show the rest of the room and the rest of the Canucks that he was serious about getting better. I think the bigger part for Kessler and his improvement this year, guys, is we're talking about someone who was one of the mouthiest, yappiest, whiniest players in the game. And this past offseason, he went about deciding that, look, he wasn't going to get involved in all those verbal jousts that he used to. He wasn't going to go get up in the face of the officials and whine and complain as he had been in years past. He was just going to go ahead and play hockey. And he worked on his wrist shot, a fair bit over the offseason, and that's been evident, too, because he seems to be picking corners and hitting spots that he never used to. So, no, I think it has less to do with not being named captain and more to do with some changes, in one case, a skill, and in one case, an attitude on the ice.
Matthew, the Sedins were, last year they exceeded everybody's expectations, and obviously Henrik won the MVP, and they were a force to be reckoned with. Many people this year.
Hello?
Yeah, are you still there? Still have you? Or do we not have him?
We may have dropped Matt. Okay, we'll try and get
I'm
Matt.
I'm here,
back.
Guys.
Oh, you're there? You okay. Can you hear us, Matt?
I can hear you now.
Okay, good. There's a little technical glitch there.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear Richard?
No, I can't.
Okay, then I'll ask the question then to start. Anyway, what Richard was saying was he was talking about the Sedins and their career year last year and how, tremendous of a season they had, and sort of everybody expected a bit of a dip in their numbers this coming season. Why haven't we seen that dip, and, why are they still continuing on with the level that they established last year?
Because they have fantastic chemistry, because they're very good hockey players, and because these are guys who, over the course of their career, if you take a look at what they've done, they typically get better. They don't take backward steps. I, like everyone else, I think was shocked that Daniel Henrik Sedin last year, at age 29, close to age 30, could push their games forward and turn from point-of-game players to 100-point players, which effectively what Daniel was if he didn't miss the 20 games with the ankle injury. So, I got so much time for these two players. They're so professional. They work on their game every summer in Sweden. And they've been together for every game this season. This is the other thing. They're pretty durable, too. I mean, Daniel missed his 20 games last year. That was the biggest chunk of time that either of them has missed over 10 years in this league. Both of them are together. Alex Burrows is a wonderful compliment on that line. And, they obviously have something that no other two players in the league have in terms of being able to read each other and understand where the other one's going. It's been a very effective combination. I mean, Daniel was terrific last night with several goals. He's up to 27 goals, guys. It's another game winner last night. That's 5 on the year, and I think he's about to break the club record that Marcus Naslund holds. So, they're special, special players, and they're a lot of fun to watch these days.
Matthew, Manny Malhotra came in this year, and obviously in the circle he's been unbelievable this year. He's running at about 60%, and he's second in the league. How much of a significance has that played for the Canucks in their success?
Oh, big time. Big time, Leah. It's a great question because, you know, they were sort of a mediocre team in the face-off circle last year, and they looked at Malhotra and what he does there, and he's been extraordinary. The last time I checked the league stats, Vancouver was first or second in the league in winning face-offs. There have been some nights where the dominance in the face-off circle has been the key to victory, and it's not just Malhotra. I mean, Kessler's been pretty good in there too, and so is Henrik Sedin. But Malhotra in particular, he's just, you go out and you watch him, and it's remarkable when somebody beats him on a draw. He specifically says he tries to overpower people in the face-off circle, just try and be as powerful as he can coming down with his motion, and it seems to work. But yeah, no, it's a good question because a big part of their success has been winning the puck in the face-off circle. And when, you know, you have the team like Vancouver does with a lot of guys who can handle the puck, you know, if you win that face-off, especially if you win it in the offensive zone, it works like a mini power play. So, yeah, it's been a big part of the success, and Malhotra right there front and center.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail.
Matthew, you hear me now?
Yeah.
There we go. Good stuff.
It's a Verizon commercial.
Verizon commercial.
Sammy Salo, long-term injury reserve. Yeah. You know, that's obviously been the talk around town. What is going to happen with that? What do you think Mike Gilles is going
to
do?
Yeah, that's the big mystery. They got a clear salary to bring to activate Salo. It's somewhere between 1.5 and 1.8 million. Salo's been skating a little bit with his teammates, although it's still probably several weeks away from any kind of legitimate comeback. There is even some doubt whether there's going to be any kind of comeback here because, you know, Salo has said something along the lines of, you know, I've been injured 50 times in my career, and if I'm not fully healthy, then I'm not going to go about trying to push something like an Achilles tendon because I sort of want to walk when I'm older in life.
Nice feature.
So my sense is that the Canucks, you know, if Salo's ready to go, and I think he will be in about a month, the Canucks are going to have to move out some salary. They'll probably move out some salary for almost nothing coming back. They'll activate Salo, and then they'll go about the business of you know, forging forward with eight defensemen, six of whom make at least $3 million or more.
Matthew, we were talking about this a bit before you joined us here, and we were talking about the Corey Schneider factor, because the fact is that Roberto Luongo, the past two seasons, once they get to the conference final, he looks tired, he looks somewhat spent, and they haven't been able to take that next step to get to the Stanley. So, but Corey has come in, first loss in regulation the other night against the New York Rangers, and he's really come in and done such a stellar job for them. Do you think that could be the key point which puts them over top this year, the fact that Luongo's going to get some rest and Corey's in there doing a solid job?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's going to be difficult to say because I don't suspect that Schneider's going to play much in the playoffs, and, you know, who knows with regards to Luongo, whether it was, you know, fatigue the last couple of years. He was terrible in the last couple of postseasons. Yeah. That much was clear. And the bigger the stage, the higher pressure the game, the worse Roberto Luongo was. So the idea this year was, okay, well, maybe he played too much hockey because he was playing 60 to 70 games a year. And the plan this year was to get Corey Schneider into more games and see if a rested Roberto Luongo would make a difference. I don't know whether it's going to be, you know, the fact that he's rested in the playoffs, if that makes a difference. What I do know is the plan has worked perfectly according to form this year. Schneider's played, I think it's 10 or 11 games at this point. As Leah mentioned, he was undefeated in regulation until the other night and really deserved better the other night at the Garden where they get beat 1-0, and he's probably the best player on the ice. So he's been a big part of the equation thus far because when they go to the backup now, they don't have to worry about some substandard goaltending. And if he's spelling Roberto Luongo and going to make him better in the playoffs, and then his contribution is twofold to the Canucks in 2009-2010.
Matthew, we'll let you go on this last question.
2010-11, I should say.
2010-11, there you go. We'll let you go on this question, but we're about just over 6 weeks away from the trade deadline. You know, what do you see Mike Gillis looking to add at the deadline, if anything?
Well, that's the thing, guys. I think the addition will be Sammy Salo and getting him on the roster somehow, some way. They don't really have a whole lot of cap space for anything else. So, I mean, you know, to sit here and think that the Canucks are going to be big players on deadline day, I just don't see it. Gillis the last couple of years has been very hesitant to make deals on that day. He doesn't like the price. He doesn't like the deadline that seems to work in a lot of cases on behalf of the seller and not the buyer. I think the only acquisition they made last year was Andrew Alberts, who was sort of a depth defenseman for them. And I'd be very, very surprised if they're big movers and shakers this year because they just don't have the cap space. So I think moving some salary out and finding a way to get Salo on the roster would probably be the trade deadline, quote-unquote, acquisition for the Canucks this year.
Very Pittsburgh-esque, getting an injured defenseman back, your trade deadline acquisition. Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Matt. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. It's rapid fire. You know it. You love it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. In the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. Big thank you so far to the Craig Button of the NHL Network for joining us right at the top of the show. And we just heard from Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail. And of course, you can download this show available on iTunes sometime this afternoon. Just become a subscriber. It'll get sent right to you. Just look for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Gentlemen and lady, it's time for Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Jared Smithson of the Nashville Predators re-signed with the team for 2 years. He will make $800,000 per year, marginally over the NHL's minimum salary of $525,000. Smithson ranks ninth in the NHL in face-off winning percentage, a stat we just spoke about with Matthew Sakaris of being valuable. Are you surprised a player in the top 10 of such a valued skill set would re-sign for so little?
No. Do I have to explain now? That's
sure.
Probably the right thing. No, Jared, he's a versatile veteran. He can do it all. He's Barry Trotz type of player. But, I mean, come on. The guy, the most production he's ever gotten is a 9-goal season in his entire career. And people have to understand that this is the new cap generation. This guy could as easily be down in the AHL right now as he could be in the NHL. And he's, they can replace them in a second. So this is the type of things. Unless you're a big-name player, you're not getting that kind of money. They've got a new CBA that's going to be done and whatnot. It's the cap world. That's it.
We talk a lot about Barry Trotz, but let's give equal credit to David Poile. I mean, a signing like this, I think it's a little bit below market value. And that's just my opinion. And I mean, you look at Scotty Nickel. At the same time, you look at Scotty Nickel, and he's making $700,000 this year, 0.76, and he's a kind of similar skill set, a guy who can play kind of everywhere and is really good at face-offs. So do I think it's undervalued in the market? Yes. Do I think David Poile's done a good job? Yes. But maybe if you're pairing him to Scotty Nickel, for example, then it's about where he should be getting paid. If I was a GM, I'd bump it up to one and bring him in, but,
Prior to Thursday night's game against Ottawa, Islanders enforcer Zina and Konopka yelled at a TSN personality broadcasting the game to stop calling the Islanders doormats because they aren't anymore. The Isles then proceeded to lose to the Senators 6-4. Given everything we know about the Isles on and off the ice, do you agree with calling them a doormat?
Yes, because they are. I mean, this organization's has been run to the ground by Charles Wang and friends. And I don't know who's doing what there because you never really know. Starting from the Neil Smith GM ship for a day. Who knows what's going on there? But this is, it's not an indictment of the players. It's not the players' fault that they're playing in this environment. And Zdeněk Knopka, I understand the pride there. He's a scrapper. He battled his way through Syracuse and many places in the AHL to get to the National Hockey League. But, I mean, come on. This organization as a whole is a joke.
That was pathetic.
Exactly right.
Leah, your thoughts about, are the Islanders a doormat?
Well, I don't ever use the word doormat.
That's
I use cellar dwellers.
Okay.
Maybe it's the girl in me. I feel bad for them. No, but absolutely right. They've been run into the ground. It's so sad. It's not the player's fault. But I understand, Zenon making the comment because, really, it's not their fault. They've got tons of young talent. He's right. But I don't like the word doormat.
Okay. Richard. Henrik Lundqvist of the New York Rangers registered... Oh, this isn't for Richard. This is for everybody. Henrik Lundqvist of the New York Rangers registered a shutout in the Rangers' victory
of the season,
over the Canucks on Thursday night. He did not register a point, though, noteworthy because prior to Thursday, he had an assist in 3 straight games. In your mind, where does Lundqvist's point streak register on the accomplishment streak?
I'll let the co-host here with the last name Hext, I'll touch this one.
It doesn't register. I mean, the thing, the six shutouts, the fact that it's his sixth shutout of the season, that is something that registers, because that is unbelievable that he's already got six. But come on. 3 points.
Yeah, and
it's great.
And the truth is,
but,
you know, like you talk about, like Ron Hextall, Marty Turco, Marty Brodeur, those guys actually move the puck forward. Henrik Lundqvist isn't exactly those kind of the goaltenders. You
he
know?
Drops it off behind his net. Yeah. The guy picks it up, and they happen to score and a couple passes later.
I mean, I know they were short on scoring in New York, but come on.
After beating the Montreal Canadiens on Wednesday night, Pittsburgh Penguins goalie Marc-Andre Fleury took a jab at Canadiens goalie Carey Price by impersonating his arms crossed pose. This after Fleury had to hear about his Habs curse prior to the game. Are the Habs and Penguins becoming one of the NHL's better rivalries, or is there still too big of a disparity in talent to become a sincere rivalry?
I think they are becoming rivalries, and part of that's because the Crosby's boyhood team was Montreal.
Loves them.
And so
yeah.
It's already hyped up, and you always play in the most story, you play against the most storied franchise, it's always hyped up, but I think there is a bit of a rivalry there, and I don't necessarily think it's, you know, at the scale of, you know, Colorado, Detroit, or some of these top teams who go through each other, even like Pittsburgh, Philly. But it's a rivalry, and it's nice to see.
And I don't think that there's that much of a disparity between the talent. Like, I mean, yeah, in the standings, they're about 7 points right now. But the fact is that the Habs have won 2 games and Pittsburgh's won 1. So, I mean, I think this is going to be one of a great rivalry. But it needs to be a little bit more physical to me in order for something to become a big rivalry. Because they don't, I mean, come on, really? You got to drop every once in a while if you're going to get under each other's skin.
Real quick now, the Phoenix Coyotes will be guaranteed to get their biggest crowds of the year on January 22nd and February 5th when they offer $1 soft drinks, beer, and hot dogs. If you ever attended an event that offered this promotion, how many beers, soft drinks, and hot dogs would you aim to consume to make your ticket purchase worthwhile?
They have hot dogs and soft drinks at hockey games? I thought it was just beer.
Well,
yeah. That's my answer.
I can't even try and answer this, Drew. It'd be like eclipsing 20.
Yeah.
you mean answering that question and maintaining any credibility?
And there'd be no lines.
Exactly.
There'd probably be not lines at a Coyotes game either for the
That's
beer. Because there's not a lot of people there.
They bring them to you and they pay you to do that.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It's an interesting feature we have there. Anyways, that's it for Rapid Fire for this week. It's time for Cheers and Jeers.
Cheers and Jeers.
Richard, we'll start with you. Cheers or Jeers?
I have a cheer this week, Drew, to Brian Helmer. If you saw the story,
yes.
He was a longtime AHLer,
great
had
one.
Some time here. And he came back, he kind of had semi-retired, and was playing in, you know, kind of pick-up hockey in Ontario, decided, you know what, I don't want to, I'm 38 years old, not 83, I'm not done, I'm going to come back, sign with the AHL, sign with Oklahoma City, Edmonton's farm team, and broke the all-time defense point record.
Very good. Leah Hextall, cheer or jeer?
Mine, I'm cheering as well. I'm going to James Reimer, Winnipeg boy, goaltender, went on a bit of hot streak with the Toronto Maple Leafs, but really the reason we're cheering him is because the parade was back on there momentarily.
True,
because the Leafs
true.
Were going to the Cup again.
They won 3 or 4
because they had
games,
the best goalie ever.
I know.
Yeah.
Gotta love it.
It's that easy.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers this week by jeering fans in Madison Square Garden for chanting USA, USA during the Rangers-Canucks game.
I like it.
Ryan Kessler's American, you know, I just don't understand it. You know, if they're playing with their country on their jersey, yeah, chant USA, USA.
I bet you there's more Canadians on New York than there are on Vancouver. I almost guarantee that.
Yeah.
Probably. That's why it doesn't make any sense. I mean, I like the passion, but better chance. You're in New York, for God's sakes. Better chance. This is New York City.
And they have smart fans in New York.
That's what
like
I'm saying.
Like smart hockey fans.
Yeah.
It's a hockey market.
They can do better than that.
Hmm.
That's it for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. A thank you to Craig Button of the NHL Network, to Matthew Sakaris of the Globe and Mail. A big thank you to Leah Hextall for joining us in studio for the last hour here.
Great.
We encourage you to check out the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe. Go search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, Illegal Curve, or Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And you can always visit IllegalCurve.com to get a recap of this week's show. Until next Saturday morning here on Sports Radio 1290, we say stay tuned for NFL coverage coming up at 3 o'clock and for the best in sports coverage. And until next Saturday morning, good afternoon and good luck.